Welcome to the Bitcoin Infinity Academy, brought to you by Plan B Network and Bitbox. This is the course on Sovereignty Through Mathematics, my first book, the very last episode. I'm Knut Svanholm, and I'm here, as always, with Luke DeWolf. Good morning, Luke.
Good morning, Knut. I'm excited to recap what we've explored in this course and talk about what's coming up.
Yeah, so am I. I mean, we've done 13 episodes so far, I believe. This is being the 14th one, so this is how these courses will go. We'll do an opening episode and a closing episode where we summarize the things, and in between that are all the chapters. So yeah, looking forward to remembering what we've talked about here.
Yes, absolutely. And I think we should just dive into that, and afterwards we can talk about how to get involved with the future courses and how what we all have coming up, including why we, for example, are going to be taking a short break before we start the next one.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, so I think what we're going to do here, just to summarize here, is talk about a little bit about each chapter. The book as a whole doesn't really have one unifying theme. The closest thing to a summation is the years ahead, the very last episode. But it's a collection of essays, I guess, short essays on Bitcoin and interesting ideas related to it, with quite many of them being novel for the time and even for now, I would say. The start was the chapter called Everything a Trade, which is an interesting segue into the world of exploring Bitcoin, because it really is a chapter about Austrian economics, essentially, human action, without actually being about that, right, Knut?
Yeah, I wrote that before I fell down that rabbit hole. So it's kind of interesting. It is, you know, describing how everything we do is basically a trade with one another. Whenever we do anything voluntarily, like what we're doing now, we're talking to one another, recording it. Like, we both do that because we believe we have something to gain from doing that. And that's at the core of every voluntary human interaction, which means that you could frame everything as a trade, which is how I open this book.
Very good. I'm sort of reminded about like other things that are a little simpatico, like just a lot of the ideas of Bitcoin making total sense before actually exploring them and understanding them. I think a lot of us Bitcoiners are pretty primed for this without formally thinking about this stuff or getting educated, and that was clearly the case for you, right? Yeah,
it's logical. I think Bitcoin draws logical people to it, the people who are like deductive reasoning and mathematics and such. There's a lot of engineering types in Bitcoin that all of a sudden find that, yeah, you can do this kind of reasoning for the subjective stuff in reality as well as the objective. It's just that the method is slightly different, but there is a method to figuring out the boundaries of what we can and cannot know and apply that appropriately.
Yes, and I mean, I think especially important to know here is that this is really just a description of reality, and I like that the best. Is that a lot of this stuff, it's not empirical, as we say in as you say in praxeology, especially, and that's a little bit of foreshadowing that there's a whole book coming up on this topic, basically, at the end of this whole cycle. But it's not like I saw one comment about this chapter that was like it's such a dull way of looking at the world, that everything is, and cynical even, that everything is a trade between people. But it's not conscious though, right? People aren't thinking about every interaction in terms of like is this a profitable trade for me. It's just that we act that way, and subconscious under the hood, our operating system is making these little decisions, and then what bubbles up is that, oh, this thing makes the most sense, or this choice appears to be the correct one.
Yeah, and I think that is largely due to economics having a bad name, because most economic schools only take financial transactions into account. Austrian economics, or the Austrian school, is the only one that takes every human valuation into account. It doesn't necessarily mean that we trade money with one another when we interact. It's just that we're purposefully doing it voluntarily and with consent. And that shouldn't be a bad thing. It's been painted as bad by the opponents of sound ideas. Capitalism has somewhat of a bad ring to it to a lot of people. And one of my goals with writing all of this stuff is to whitewash all those words again and make people understand what they originally meant and why they're good and not bad. Profits are not bad. Capitalism is not bad. Liberalism is not bad. Progressive, the word progressivism has been hijacked too. Like there are so many words that really have different meanings when you view them from a praxeological lens.
Yeah, lots of foreshadowing there. We'll be covering those topics in the future books quite significantly, especially Clown World and Praxeology.
Yeah.
So the next chapter was financial atheism. And this was certainly an interesting one where we had a little bit of back and forth in terms of the definition of atheism and a few other things. But I think the ultimate point here was that Bitcoin kind of takes the ideology or the religion out of the financial system, something like this, right?
Yeah, and I use the Dawkinsian definition of the word atheism, which is just I reject these dogmatic claims about the world that we cannot know. And the same is true for money. Like, I reject the claim that we should have full faith in our monetary system as it is. I prefer to verify instead of trust. So that's sort of the point of that chapter.
The next one is the gullible collective, and certainly talks about ideas where, yeah, ideas can hijack the crowd, basically. A little bit of relation to kind of the madness of crowds. I think about that in my afterthoughts about the chapter.
What do you think? Great book, by the way.
Yeah.
Douglas Murray's The Madness of Crowds. But yeah, it's also about how this is also evolutionary. Like even as in other flocks than human flocks, you can gain advantage by acting as if your individual actions are for the good of the flock, when you're really just thinking about yourself. And like psychopaths use this to get into leadership positions, claiming all sorts of things, claiming to have superpowers, either that they're closer to God or that they can redistribute wealth or other illusions, redistribute wealth more efficiently than the free market, I should add. And yeah, it's a battle cry for individualism once again.
Yeah, very good. And the next chapter was An Immaculate Conception. And this one is, well, I think this is basically the origin of the to be more fleshed out concept of the one-shot principle, right?
Yeah, it's about like if you use the towel before you shower, you get a very different result than if you use it after. So the order in which events play out plays a huge role in like the timeline we end up living in. And Bitcoin works in this timeline. We should be happy about that and study it. And I think that is to a large extent because of how things played out. The block size wars being the obvious example that could have ended very differently. And if it had, chances are high that you and I wouldn't be here right now talking about this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of history lessons in this book. It certainly is a product of its time in a good way. It's good to know that this was rooted in the couple of years just post block size wars. And I think maybe some have forgotten the lessons of the block size wars, especially these days. It's a little crazy that that's like two full halvings ago. This book is a halving and a half old.
Yeah.
Interesting to talk in those terms too, isn't it?
Yeah. Haven't thought of it about it like that, but yeah, all true.
All true. Up next was proof of work. And this one, of course, is about the proof of work mechanism. This might be one of the most educational chapters, as in directly talking about concepts about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And important to note, of course.
Absolutely. I'd like to write a chapter on economic nodes in the future and what that is. But let's not go into that. I mean, proof of work, very misunderstood concept. People see it as mainstream media paints it as wasteful, when it's rather the opposite of wasteful. It's like the optimal use of resources. The whole point is the costliness. And this chapter dives into that. And that was interesting to talk about with you.
Yes, certainly. And a related topic is, of course, scarcity, the following chapter, which, of course, talks about how the importance of Bitcoin is tied to its scarcity. The proof of work concept, the scarcity concept together create a really unstoppable force, basically, that is Bitcoin.
Yeah, absolutely. Scarcity, the fact that the Satoshis are finite plays a huge role in why they're valuable at all. If they weren't, Bitcoin wouldn't be Bitcoin. It would be something else.
Very much so. Very much so. And then in the next chapter, Holding On certainly talks about similar things here in terms of how by holding your Bitcoin, you're actually doing a service to the network, essentially, amplifying the scarcity, something like this.
Yeah, and there's a history lesson in there too about GameCube and the origins of the word HODL, which is funny. I saw that GameCube reminds me of GameStop. There was a movie like a year ago with Seth Rogen and a couple of others about the GameStop, Robin Hood and GameStop, the whole stock market thingy that happened. That was later shut down by evil hedge fund managers. And Bitcoin memes were all over that movie. They used the word HODL all the time.
Diamond hands.
I think they didn't even know that it came from the Bitcoin space. And I was thinking at all times in that movie, like, all of this can be done again, but on Bitcoin, and then it's unstoppable. Like, the fact that you used it, you just refuse to sell, that a legion of investors refuse to sell, push the price up, and you, with Bitcoin, we can do that, but forever. Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. Nothing stops this train. And then in a similar vein, the Changing the Rules chapter, I think, talked a lot about how it's really hard to actually change the rules of Bitcoin, and that's important, and a little more block size wars history there, right?
Yeah, and also how the rules can, at least theoretically, only change for the better, because it requires this super majority, basically everyone agreeing that the change should be done. So we sort of define what a good idea is by that metric. Like, if everyone agrees, like, who's to say that it's a bad idea? But still, it gets harder and harder. There's a lot of talk about ossification nowadays. I don't really believe that Bitcoin can ossify, since we can theoretically all change our minds again at some point in the future. Anyway, you can never know if it has ossified or not. It's impossible to tell. But of course, it's good that Bitcoin can adapt if needed. If, for instance, this the most popular FUD at the moment is probably the quantum computing FUD. So if quantum computers are ever a threat, at least Bitcoin has 10 minutes to adapt, which the banking system does not.
Yes, exactly. And well, I mean, I think the other thing with that too is that these major fixes that are on the horizon are, I hope, going to be, in fact, tackled. There's one that's going to need to change the data type, one of the data types before that rolls over by the end of the century, something like this. The quantum computing thing may be changing to a quantum-resistant algorithm, at least for the cryptography, that could be in order. But the thing is, I think there's this almost reflex to innovate on Bitcoin that I very much think is, and I think we are in agreement here about that, let's not screw with it if it's working. And I think there's an element of developer types in the space that have a urge to tinker and build stuff and think that they're making big improvements to Bitcoin, where it really is only one thing that was that ever needed to be fixed, and from now on it just needs to work. That's it.
The famous left-hard comedian John Oliver once described Bitcoin as everything you don't know about money combined with everything you don't know about computers, which is a pretty good description. And unfortunately, we have two main camps in Bitcoin, like people who don't understand computers and people who don't understand money. And sometimes they don't overlap. We should not understand both equally. Sometimes the people who are technically knowledgeable are more eager to try to change things and add new features and stuff, whereas the people who know money do not want to change the protocol. And sometimes to their detriment, because sometimes it needs to be changed because there needs to be a bug. Something that is a bug fix might be advertised as something else. So, well, we just need to, over time, learn how to talk to one another. And as long as the nodes are in charge, I'm not worried.
Yes, exactly. That's the optimistic point at the end there, of course. The next chapter is money as an amplifier. And this is a great chapter, an interesting point about how basically money is how you amplify your ideas in the world. And by having money and resources to be able to do stuff that you can amplify good in the world. And it's sort of, to me, it echoes a little bit of like you need to have your own situation in order before you can start shaping the world in your view. Something like that, and the power of having sound money, basically.
Absolutely, and it's also why quote unquote bad personality traits are more common in the fiat world, because when the money doesn't function properly, there are shortcuts, and you can cheat the system. And if you're a personality type that is prone to do that, then that gets amplified too. So, but within the in Bitcoin, being honest is rewarded, while being disingenuous is punished appropriately. So it amplifies people the right way, and you don't get these crony capitalist types on the psychopaths on top of every hierarchical ladder anymore. You get more friendly psychopaths.
Yeah, very, very good. And then next up was the environment, which to the name was a few ideas about how Bitcoin relates to the environment and energy use. A lot of kernels of things that we explore a lot more in depth, especially in Clown World and on our podcast and everything. So yeah, some good ideas about Bitcoin and energy and the environment.
Yeah, and I've written a lot about this. There's a video, a Joni Appelberg video about Bitcoin's environmental impact, if not two. And yeah, it's a topic that's very misunderstood, and it's hard to communicate to normies because they don't understand sound money, and therefore they don't understand the value of quote unquote wasting so many resources. Like Bitcoin. The fiat currencies also have a consensus mechanism, and that consensus mechanism is called world wars. Whoever wins the world war gets to decide what the world reserve currency is and what currency oil gets priced in. And that's arguably more wasteful than proof of work.
Yes, exactly. And I think the environmental energy stuff is just so counterintuitive to people. It's one of the things that I think is most important to break out of the skulls of some anti-coiners, and that's one of the biggest things that would convert a lot of people if they understood this stuff properly.
Yeah, but we have some great spokespersons for is that the word, spokespersons for this? I mean, Troy Cross, Daniel Batten, Rachel Gayer comes to mind. Very good at talking to politicians and decision makers and energy companies and stuff, and explaining this stuff to them. Bitcoin is good for the environment, both on a superficial level, but first and foremost on a really deep level, that we get this type of money and type of world where we incentivize quality over quantity and saving over spending, and you know, against Valgo consumerism, really. Yeah, that's what I'm excited about.
Absolutely. Likewise. And then the next one was a new form of life, possibly the most abstract of the chapters in this particular book, talking about the idea that Bitcoin might in fact be a life form. And I think there's really a lot to that. It's a life form that exists on the internet and with nodes, but it's a life form of a certain kind. It's certainly more of a life form than, for example, any type of artificial intelligence currently is, at least in my estimation.
Yes, real stupidity beats artificial intelligence every time. And Bitcoin is the best representation of real stupidity that we have. It's the human minds interconnected. There's a lot more on this in Clown World and in other books, that how we actually are our Satoshis, because they live in our heads. It's all about keeping secrets from one another. And everything in Bitcoin is not backed by energy or backed by thermodynamically this or that. It's really predicated on human action, all of it, and what we choose to do, how compliant we choose to be, how resilient we choose to be. Like, there's a human behind every node and behind every miner. So I find that infinitely fascinating. I can't stop thinking about that aspect. I think it's so beautiful.
Yeah, and I think exploring these types of ideas are the unique things that you get in this set of courses, and you don't really get anywhere else.
Oh, yeah, I'm not the only one writing about this stuff, but it's definitely one of the things that the more philosophical. I think this kind of stuff is why people sometimes have called me an armchair philosopher, because I have armchairs and I philosophize about stupid stuff like this.
Yes, very, very much. I think that's the case. And so finally, the years ahead. This is the summary chapter of this book. And as summary chapters go, it was in fact pretty good. It's a few predictions, really, of the future of Bitcoin from the time. And they've pretty much turned out to be on the ball, maybe in terms of magnitude, maybe slightly off. But the... some important ones, for example, this wasn't actually in the chapter, but it was in our discussion about the chapter, was, for example, the way the block reward keeps being valuable to miners is if the price doubles, at least doubles every halving, every 4 years. And yeah, that seems pretty easy at this point. So lots of great predictions, but they are predictions from a snapshot in time, pretty
much. But Bitcoin has more than 10x'd in purchasing power, even not only in dollar terms, but in actual purchasing power since this was written. So I'm very happy about that. The hardest thing to know about hyper-Bitcoinization is the timeline, like the timing of the things. Like, we don't know that. We may have a slump in the markets that last for 80 years and the Bitcoin picks up again. Or hyper-Bitcoinization may start tomorrow and we might see the never go down thing happen, and it just usurps the dollar as the dominant currency of the world within a couple of weeks. We have no idea. The market is ever changing. It's a dynamic phenomenon. It's a dynamic process that we cannot foresee the future in that sense. Well, but yeah, this leads us into our year ahead, the year we have in front of us, or the 2 years rather. Doesn't it, Luke?
Yes, exactly. And I think as the summary of the book in itself is, yeah, the years ahead was the last chapter. And so now that's it. This is it for Sovereignty Through Mathematics. And now we can talk about everything we have coming up, including with our courses. The next one is on Independence Reimagined, Bitcoin Independence Reimagined, Knut's next book. And we're going to be starting that one after a short break, relatively short for the summer here. And the reasoning for that, of course, is that we have just an absolute gauntlet of conferences and traveling. And we thought that starting this new one up right away was going to, we weren't going to be able to focus on it, give it the attention that it deserves.
No, exactly. So we have a lot coming up. I'm going to Lugano now tomorrow to give a a course on praxeology, which is the latest thing we've produced here. So worth mentioning maybe a bit of history about the books, like Sovereignty Through Mathematics, the one we've just been talking about, was released back in 2019. And it has since caught it's got a life of its own nowadays. I know it has a lot of prominent fans. The next one, Independence Reimagined, I wrote in 2020. And I'm very happy with that one. I think that's the least known of my books, even though it's one of the most commonly quoted. There's a thing in there called the one-shot principle that has made its rounds on X and Noster several times about how resistance to replicability could only be discovered once. So I'm looking forward to doing that in the fall here. And before that, we have Lugano and then Prague. I'm going to Florida for a short while. And then we are both going to Bitcoin Rodeo in Calgary. Looking forward to that one a lot. I've never been to Canada. And after that, there's the Plan B summer school in Lugano. And after that, we're going to Riga. And of course, BTC Hell, the conference we're co-organizing with a bunch of other happy Finns. And that's going to be a big one too. We have some great speakers, including Jeff Booth and Adam Back and Luke Dasher and a whole plethora of others. And we're also going to, that's it before we start the next book, right? So we don't need to plan further ahead than that, I guess.
No, exactly. I think you did, in fact, remember everything, and that's great. And so, yeah, hopefully this does show, in fact, what is coming up on our schedule and why it's a good idea for us to pause and start again after that big gauntlet of conferences, especially the one that we're organizing. And we're also doing quite a bit at Prague. So, this will be out just before Prague. So if you haven't got your tickets yet to any of these conferences, you can use code INFINITY and you'll get a discount of some kind. I think they're a little different between all of them, but we're going to have a big booth in Prague. All of the books will be available there, including Praxeology. So now we've got this nice big set of five books, which is just fantastic. And we were noting also that we did this all in the last year. Like all of these re-releases were done. That's what I meant. Those are equivalent things.
Okay. Lost interest. Good for me to have an editor.
Yes. No, it's been quite the year that we've done a lot. We've accomplished a lot. We've put these books out. We've started the academy. Looking forward to everything coming up, and we're going to focus on some conferencing for a while, but after that we'll be back at it with Independence Reimagined.
Yeah, absolutely. And after that, it's Everything Divided. Looking forward to that one. And after that, it's The Inverse of Clown World, the book we wrote together, which is the deepest of deep dives we've done so far, or that I've done so far. And after that, it's the Praxeology course. And this is one that we've been working on for the last couple of months. It's completely rewritten and written more like a textbook. And I'm super proud of it. It's like a beef broth that has been boiling for 2 years here into the best version of itself. It now contains 21 chapters instead of 18. And it's like the TLDR on all the Mises stuff and Rothbard stuff. So if you're unfamiliar with praxeology, this is a great entry point, I'd say. What do you say about it, Luke?
Yeah, definitely. The praxeology book is very, very good now, and in terms of being an introduction. And I think we toned down some of the manifesto-iness that it could have had so that it's hopefully a little bit more accessible. And what's interesting is now I have the impression that praxeology actually segues perfectly into Sovereignty Through Mathematics through Everything a Trade. So basically, I would say that the praxeology book is actually now your best orange pilling book, because it's more of a gateway drug than anything else. And it comes at it from the opposite perspective of basically, libertarian Austrian economic philosophy, the basics of that, to understand the world a little bit differently. I think it would get readers who are unfamiliar with these concepts to think about it all a little bit differently. Maybe it doesn't get people to fully switch their minds over right away, but I definitely believe it would be thought provoking. And, For those who want to know more, the Bitcoin books are the next step.
Yeah, there's not even a single mention of Bitcoin in this book. However, I allude to it here and there.
Until the about the author section.
Yeah, the about the author section. It's hard to avoid it there.
So I think Knut, this is it. This has been the Sovereignty Through Mathematics course, and fairly soon we will have the second course available on our Geyser page. Of course, everyone can purchase the Mithril Adamantium membership and get everything. And we might add to that as time goes on, what's included there over time, or do more courses. Who knows? We've got the 5 planned, but we'll see where life goes. But for now, the main thing is you get all 5 books signed by Knut and by me, where I've made contributions. And we include a couple of t-shirts. The whole package is basically you get access to everything that we're doing with this academy for the entire lifespan of the academy. And so looking forward to this. And I think we're going to be going through until middle of 2027, at least. I don't think it's maybe possible that we're going to wrap up before then. So
we have at least 80 episodes ahead of us, I think, or maybe including Sovereignty, actually, but almost 100 episodes in total, I'd say. Especially given that Clown World has longer chapters, we might need to do 2 episodes per chapter there.
We might have to. I think, in fact, we will, because they also sort of flow together. It's interesting. We'll see how it goes. I think it's not going to be the best format to do 3-hour episodes, which we would probably need for those really long ones. So let's see.
Yeah. They're all available on bitcoininfinity.com, of course, where you can find a bunch of books from other authors too. And you can buy them for sats there. That's the big perk of using bitcoininfinity.com. You can pay with other payment methods too. Sorry about that, but primarily sats. And yeah, everything, tell people about them, join the groups, follow the Telegram chat, and spread the word about this stuff like wildfire. Everything helps. So smash the like button and brush your damn teeth.
And to add on to that, if you've enjoyed these books, if you've enjoyed this series, it really helps if you can leave a review somewhere. Goodreads or Amazon, those all really help. This series itself, I'm assuming if you're watching it on YouTube or Rumble that you've already subscribed, but go ahead and do that if you haven't. We'll be packaging these up doing a last share for these also. So getting in on that would also be help to spread the word on this. And we're only going to keep doing this. We've had a lot of fun with this Sovereignty Through Mathematics course, and I'm looking forward to all 4 and beyond. This has been a lot of fun. And I honestly, I think this is the natural, maybe this is the format that we'd been looking for when we first decided to even start podcasting together. It felt like a no-brainer as soon as we started to do it. So
yeah, we take our time sometimes to figure things out, but yeah, looking forward at least as much as you to doing the rest of the books too. I just love having these conversations and having the ideas challenged. That's super important.
Yeah, in future iterations, I certainly hope that we get comments about the content, and we can address these things more. So this was the first iteration, and we're only going to get better at bringing in more ideas and thinking through it all. So, but I think from my side, this is it. And so thank you to everyone who's been along with us on this journey. And we will see you hopefully at some conferences before the next course starts. And then hopefully see you in the Independence Reimagined course.
Absolutely. And a big thank you to our sponsors, the Plan B Network, where you can go to planb.network to find all their courses. There's a great one going on right now. There's last year's course for free, the Plan B Biz School. They're expanding, and there will be a lot more educational resources in the future there. Fantastic, fantastic effort. Also, the Bitbox, our favorite hardware wallet, super private, super cool. Use it. Code Infinity for how many percent off?
I forget. Just go to bitbox.swiss.
For a whole bunch of percent off.
bitbox.swiss/infinity for all the details on that. And they keep innovating. They keep innovating and coming out with new features in a good way, not like the ossification way. They're proper security professionals, and they're doing their job really well, making it possible to do lots of cool things with your hardware wallet while staying secure. So go check it out if you or anyone you know needs a hardware wallet, and they've got some other accessories on the side also. So yeah, check that out. And I think this is also the last time to make a general reminder. If you want to buy anything related to Bitcoin, try Code Infinity and see if it works.
See what happens. Yeah, and see you at the conferences. Looking forward to seeing you all in real life. I really love those moments when you get to meet, when I get to meet my readers and other Bitcoiners in general. Like we just have the best time together. I love it.
So do I. The conferences are something special. It's where a lot of the magical ideas start to form and the cool things start to happen. So looking forward to that also. Any last words, Knut?
Yeah, spadoinkle is my last word as usual. So with that, brush your teeth and see you in the next one. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Bitcoin Infinity Academy. Thank you very much for listening.